Good evening, everyone. Hope everyone's holding out well. And it is my pleasure to present tonight's shiur. The last few parshios have been intense, have been dramatic. The story of Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef, really the model, the root story of that repeating saga of brother hates brother, infighting in the Jewish family. There cannot be a more contemporary, unfortunately timeless struggle and challenge, which makes our parsha all the more magical. Our parsha, with its reconciliation and harmony, when Yosef reveals himself to the brothers and does not enact retribution, but quite the contrary. He, so to speak, embraces the brothers and he says, "Don't feel bad. Hashem was behind it all, so I could be here to be the patron." The heroism of Yosef and how he binds the family together, it's all the more remarkable when we consider the intensity of this angst. And really, our parsha wells up inside of all of us the hope that maybe there's a way, maybe there's some sort of roadmap in our parsha to get this thing called Jewish family life, Jewish unity right. And the severity of this challenge of Jewish unity becomes apparent when you trace a pattern in Jewish history. Feel the pulse of Jewish history. You will find again and again that Jewish infighting yields galus, yields exile. Let's trace a few examples. Let's begin in our story. Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef. This is what brings the Jewish people down to Mitzrayim, down to the land of Egypt, the first galus. Yosef ends up in Mitzrayim and by extension the whole family. And then we find a sister, an unmistakable parallel sister story later in Jewish history. When
Baba, turn off your sound.
When there's a split in the Jewish kingdom. The Jewish kingdom divides into two. We have the kingdom of Yosef, the Davidic dynasty, the kingdom of Yehuda, I apologize, the Davidic dynasty, the kingdom of Yehuda, the Davidic dynasty, and then we have a breakoff dynasty, the dynasty of the 10 tribes under Yosef. And do you not see the same thing over, the deja vu, a breakup in the kingdom? And what happens to those 10 tribes under Yosef, right? And mind you, appreciate the power of this deja vu. Yosef and Yehuda are the two main protagonists, or may I say antagonists, in the first breakup of the Jewish family. And here yet again, it's the kingdom of Yosef and Yehuda that divides into two. And what happens to the kingdom of Yosef, i.e. the 10 tribes? They are exiled, perhaps never to come back to a faraway land. Right? So yet again, the Mechiras Yosef story, infighting in the Jewish community, the Jewish family brings to exile. And the third example, we all know, the contemporary, the current exile. We are told that the Gemara tells us the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and we were exiled to Tzinas Chinam, baseless hatred. Do you appreciate that none of these three stories can be studied in isolation? It's an unmistakable pattern. Jewish infighting yields exile, which makes sense because the dissension from within, when we are internally disparate and separate, when our hearts are far from each other. So the Mida Keneged Mida, the measure for a measure, is that we will be scattered to the four corners of the earth. We will lose the unifying homeland, the unifying government of independent Jewish sovereignty, the unifying Beis HaMikdash where we all worship together. Right? You appreciate this is a cancer, Jewish suffering. Is there any characteristic that so defines the Jewish people like Jewish suffering, the Galus Geula story? Well, here we have it again and again, attributable to Jewish infighting, to the sort of Yosef story. And my sentiment that the Galus Geula saga, the Galus saga, is directly tied to this sort of Jewish infighting is brought together magnificently in a well-known medrash in our parasha, which many of us learned in childhood. Have a look. In this week's parasha, when Yosef finally reveals himself to his brothers and embraces his brothers, the pasuk says, "Vayipol al tzavari v'nyamin achiv v'yefk." He fell on his brother's Binyamin's neck and he cried. U'binyamin bach al tzavar, and his beloved brother Binyamin, this is his full brother, the one brother who he shares a mother with, cries on his neck. Yosef and Binyamin cry on each other's neck. Why so, we're taught in the Medrash? Yosef is crying on Binyamin's neck because he has a vision of the future, that in Binyamin's portion lies Yerushalayim, lies the Beis HaMikdash, which will be destroyed twice over. And Binyamin is crying on Yosef's neck because he in turn has a vision of the future, that in Yosef's portion will lie the Mishkan Shiloh, the Tabernacle of Shiloh, which will be destroyed. Now, we know this Medrash, but consider we could roll it right off our tongue. But think about its meaning, think about its message. Why is it here, in the poignant moment of reunification, re-embrace between Yosef and his brothers, that Yosef and Binyamin are having this vision of the future? Bati Mikdash's temples and the portion of Binyamin destroyed. Tabernacle of Shiloh and Yosef's portion destroyed. What is the relevance to the scene in front of us of Yosef reuniting with his brothers? But now we get it. The saga of Jewish suffering throughout history, of Churban, of Galus, is directly connected to this sort of infighting, which they see having played out right in front of them. That here, during the, here at the climax of the story, when Yosef is finally reuniting with his brothers, and they have a few moments, so to speak, few, all that drama, all the pain of all these years, Yosef and Binyamin have this painful sight that it ain't over yet. This sort of Gala saga due to Jewish infighting will continue. There will be Churban in the future. Don't you see how so tragically, but so poignantly the Medrash is capturing this tragedy for us? The cancer of Jewish suffering, of Churban, of Gala and Geula, directly attributed to Jewish suffering. And therefore I return to my original statement that with all of this in mind, our parsha, with its reunification of the family, with its harmony within the family, carries real promise to it. Hopefully our parsha is a roadmap how we can patch things together, how we could patch together the fragmented Jewish family once again now as it was fragmented then, and dispel with this cancer called Jewish infighting, and hence dispel with the consequence of galus, of Jewish suffering. So let's sink our teeth in. Well, let's try to develop from our parsha lessons, messages, but not from without. No homilies, no verbach, no pontification. From within the text itself, I'm convinced it's all there if we only mine it methodically and with sensitivity. Let's develop from within our parsha itself the roadmap for reconciliation. And let's begin with Yosef, who's clearly the hero of the story. Clearly the hero of the story. The way, it goes without saying, the way he overcomes all personal pain, all urges for revenge, and quite the contrary. Not only does he not enact revenge, he says, not only don't I feel bad about what happened, you guys don't feel bad about what happened. This was from Hashem. Hashem sent me down here in order to serve as a patron, and therefore I will magnanimously support you, quite the contrary of taking revenge. Yosef's the hero here. He ought to be our colossal inspiration here, the one from whom we are going to take our examples. Let's think about what Yosef's doing here. Yosef's message, Yosef's overture to his brothers, sounds overly simplistic, believe it or not. Very, very pious. Which is, despite how much you harmed me, it was really from Hashem. So let's sing Kumbaya and get back together again. Isn't that what a superficial reed sounds like? Now, I'm very, very troubled with that. I'm troubled with the ability to apply that to my own life and to present people who have wronged me. Is it really true that we absolve the guilty party who harmed us by saying, well, it was from Hashem? Hashem is the great puppeteer, the great master designer. Do we believe in absolving people like that? Is that the message? Is that the virtue? I mean, we believe that while Hashem is ultimately the master designer of everything, man faces culpability, faces responsibility for his deeds. That's Judaism 101, the concept of Bechira. Right, that's problem number one I have, theologically, with suggesting that Yosef's absolving the brothers. That's number one. But number two, I'm going to challenge us. Is it even a healthy response on a human level when someone has harmed you to try to whitewash it? To try to whitewash the let bygones be bygones so easily by saying, you know, it wasn't really you, it was Hashem. Something almost seems delusional about that, inauthentic to the human condition. The human condition and all its suffering, all the suffering which engulfs the person. To so easily and so tritely say, it wasn't you, it was Hashem. Something just does not seem wholesome about it. It's not applicable to our lives, what as a Torah's Chaim ought to be. So let's see if we can delve into Yosef's words a little more deeply. And make beautiful and develop beautiful meaning from it. So let's study carefully the script. Yosef tells his brothers, "V'ata, and now, al tatsevu val yichabab b'neichem. Don't feel bad, ki machar to osihema, that you sold me here." He quite clearly states, "You sold me here. There is no getting around that fact that you did the act. You are red-handed in the act. But don't feel bad about it. Ki lemichya, because for the purpose of being a patron, shilachani Elokim, Hashem has sent me." Focus on that word shilachani. Sent me. The word shlichus, the root word shlichus, means mission. You might have sold me. You might have done the deed. But the shlichus, the mission, is from Hashem. That while man does deeds, and man is certainly responsible for his deeds, Hashem is behind the mission. Hashem is behind the great design. Yosef's not absolving his brothers of their deed, but rather he's saying, along with your deed, there's a bigger picture of a divine design called a shlichus, called a mission, a larger master plan which is larger than any of the particular acts and machinations of man as players on the stage. And you will notice how this word shlichus, divine mission, dots the narrative. As he continues, Vayishalcheni Elokim, God sent me. It's a mission from God I was placed here. And hence he says, V'ata lo atem shalachtem. You didn't send me. The mission is not from you. Yes, the act is from you. You did the act and you will be held responsible for that. But the mission is not from you. The grand design here is not from you. Ki ha'elokim, Hashem is the mission control party. The grand design is from Hashem. Do you see how Yosef is drawing a very clear distinction between act and grand design, what he calls shlichus? We human beings do acts with whatever intentions we and motivations we have. But there is something larger than us. The grand design from Hashem, which is ultimately something positive, as Yosef is saying, despite the intentions of man, of the players in the story. The brothers are seeking to undermine Yosef. But despite their negative schemes, Hashem, in his mission, in his place of mission control, is masterminding this thing to be something positive, to have a redemptive quality. Apparently, what we human beings need to reconcile with those who wronged us is a redemptive quality, that we can see ultimate positive from Hashem in what happened. Despite the ill intentions of man, this is what we need to reconcile, as Yosef does. And let me explain. This is a profound point in our psychology and in our makeup. A hurt from another human being is so overwhelming, is so all-encompassing, it is so stunting, it's so engulfing, there's really no way to overcome it, so long as we are bound in what the person did to us. But the moment we leave the act of the person and we talk about a greater divine design which is positive, well, suddenly there is something to embrace. Our suffering was not for naught. There's purpose, there's meaning. Purpose and meaning is, of course, ultimately what we're seeking. We don't need life to be fair. We just need meaning, purpose, that I'm not suffering in vain. And the moment I'm not suffering in vain, that despite what the person did to me, there is ultimate positive here, not due to the person, not due to my aggressor, but despite the aggressor, grand design from Hashem, well, that positive purpose redeems the whole experience, that I could cope with the experience. I could cope with what happened. And now suddenly, yes, the person did it, and yes, the person's responsible. But I could stomach. I could internalize what happened. I could deal with it because it wasn't for naught. And hence, I'm able to reconcile with them. And that's exactly what Yosef does. Right? That you appreciate this fine distinction. He's not whitewashing, he's not absolving, as we trace in text, you did the act. But there's something larger than the acts of man. Grand divine design from Hashem with ultimate positive. And once my life is positive, my experiences are has positive meaning, positive purpose, suddenly I'm at peace with it, and I could be big. Appreciate the glory, the elevated position here, the sovereign position here, that I am no longer a victim to you. Because whatever you did to me, I am relating to the experience with a positivity which transcends what you were trying to do. And that is the shlichus, the mission from Hashem, which suddenly allows me to not justify what happens, but I can deal with it. And I can even perhaps embrace it as Yosef does. And I could be the big person I reconcile. So I'm arguing a sensitive, nuanced read of the text here, the distinction between acts of man and shlichus, the grand design, purpose and meaning in my suffering. This is really what opens the door. This is the access route to overcome hurt, to move forward as a big person as Yosef does. So this is the first great message in reconciliation which I would derive tonight. If someone wronged you, don't delude yourself. They wronged you, and they intended bad. But look for how you learned from the experience, how Hashem brought you somewhere positive despite what the person did, and suddenly you could deal with it. You are not overwhelmed. You are not engulfed by the hurt and the resentment, because you're not living in that realm person to person anymore. You have found meaning, you have found purpose from this higher divine source. Powerful. I am encouraged as I'm talking here. Powerful, resonant message. Number one, which Yosef is teaching us. But I cannot have asked for better therapy than from a therapist than this message and meaning straight from the text. The redeeming our experiences, reframing our experience. You could not have used more contemporary jargon. It's right here in our Torah Kedosh, in our living Torah. It's all there. And now I would like to mind yet another message in the quest for reconciliation. And here I turn not to Yosef, but to the other protagonist in the story, Yehuda. Let's see how Yehuda directs us. Yehuda, the other great player in the story, the one who sold Yosef in the first place, but who's reconciling here with Yosef. Well, let's look to Yehuda and how he is teaching us how to deal with infighting and how to reach reconciliation. The opening narrative in our parsha, the opening scene involving Yehuda, is a very powerful scene. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda drew close to Yosef. Yes, we understand on the surface Yehuda is approaching this Egyptian viceroy, Tzafnas Paneach, who he doesn't know his true identity, and he's petitioning him, let Binyamin go. Yeah, that's the surface narrative. But we, with 20/20 vision, hindsight, who know who this Egyptian viceroy really is, and we realize Vayigash elav Yehuda means Yehuda is drawing close to Yosef, his great nemesis. With that perspective, is the word Vayigash not magical, not brimming with a redemptive art to it? The antagonists are drawing close. Parshas Vayigash opens. Yehuda's drawing close to Yosef. That, yes, on the surface, he's engaged in diplomacy. But at the end of the day, even diplomatic talk is conversation. Dialogue is happening. Unbeknownst to Yehuda, he's opening a channel of conversation with his hated brother. And I'm sensing the magical sentiment in context of this dramatic story of antagonist of brother hates brother. When Yehuda is drawing close to Yosef, is there not a suggestion here? Never lose hope in the power of conversation, and the power of dialogue, even with your hated brother. Because truth be told, the Medrash understands that it was not so simple. It was not a foregone conclusion that Yosef was going to respond by extending the olive branch to the brothers. Medrash actually understands that it was only due to the power of Yehuda's words and Yehuda's presentation that Yosef responded so benevolently. So the Vayigash elav Yehuda is in fact a story of the power of dialogue and how by conversing and conversing properly, somehow you could change hearts. Never give up on dialogue, even with our enemies. Vayigash elav Yehuda. This is my sense here. And let's see if we could ground this notion of dialogue in the Vayigash elav Yehuda. Let's study a beautiful medrash, which will bring the whole idea of dialogue, both in the Yosef Yehuda story and in our own familial struggles, interpersonal struggles, to light. Read this beautiful medrash regarding the Vayigash elav Yehuda. Says the medrash, Yehuda drawing close can be compared here to a person who is trying to draw up water from a very deep pit, deep well. The well is deep. No one's quite able to reach the well. It's too far below the earth's surface. So they tie rope to a rope, and eventually the long rope is able to reach the bottom, and they are able to draw up the delicious water. Their pail is able to extend down to the water. So too Yosef, Yehuda. While his initial words were certainly not able to reach Yosef's heart, but word after word, he's roping, tying rope after rope, so to speak, word after word, he's tying together an even longer rope to be able to reach Yosef's heart, and eventually he's able to draw up Yosef's heart. Let's appreciate the power of this metaphor. Yosef speaking to Yehuda speaking to his estranged brother Yosef. It's like the people drawing up water from this deep spring below the earth. Water is the source of life, the source of vitality. It represents the vitality and love which is in Yosef's heart. that while just like the living waters, which are buried so deep in the ground and are so elusive, so too the love, the vitality, the humanity in Yosef's heart is buried so deep below the surface, submerged in so many layers of bitterness and resentment. But it's there. It's present. Yehuda in his dialogue trusts the beating heart of Yosef. Love, vitality, these waters of life. Water which dispels the bitterness of the palate. Well, that beating heart of Yosef can be accessed and dispel all the bitterness which has clouded this dysfunctional brotherly relationship. It's not easy. The heart is buried deep below the water, below the surface. In the metaphor, the water is not readily accessible. It's buried deep in the ground, but you know it's there. So keep pulling on your rope. Keep pulling harder. Yehuda continues in the dialogue, never giving up until he reaches the water, symbolizing this source of life, this source of love, the humanity in Yosef. Appreciate the beauty of this metaphor and how it brings out for us that the waters of life, the source of life, i.e. the heart of humanity, is always present, even in our antagonist. And more to the point, when we look to the Yehuda dialogue with Yosef, Yehuda has wronged Yosef. Yehuda's the aggressor. Let's be honest. At times we are the aggressor party. At times we have harmed the other person. And we could easily give up. How can I reconcile? How will they ever forgive me? But Yehuda saying, your victim has a heart. A heart which might be buried very deep under many layers of bitterness. You're not going to be able to draw up from it easily. But it's there. Keep pulling. Keep talking. Vayigash elav Yehuda. The power of dialogue. Just keep open the channel of communication. That is my sense. That is my sentiment of what Yehuda's teaching me. How exciting, how thrilling if we can discover and reveal within the text itself an unmistakable expression of this Vayigash power of dialogue. Well, have a look at this. This discovery is splendid. As we move on in the story, when Yosef reveals himself to his brothers and re-embraces them, and they're kind of uneasy about this. This is Yosef. This is the one they wronged. I mean, is he for real? Is he going to forgive us? Could they come to terms with what they did to me? So study carefully the words of Yosef. Vayomer Yosef alachav, Yosef told his brothers, Gishuna Eli, draw close to me. Vayigashu, and they drew close. Listen again with your sensitive ear. Gishu, draw close to me. Vayigashu, and they drew close. Is this expression, Gisha, not the very same expression which opened our parsha, Vayigash Elav Yehuda? Is the textual echo not unmistakable if we only listen carefully? Text happens to use the same expression to describe Yosef pulling his brothers close. The same expression which was utilized in the original dialogue which Yehuda opens. Because the Pasuk, we understand, the Pasuk is validating for us. The eventual reconciliation which Yosef has with his brothers is the direct byproduct, is the consequence of that heroic dialogue which Yehuda opens. Because Yehuda engaged in Vayigash, Yosef responds with a symmetrical, with a reciprocal, Gishuna Eli Vayigashu, utilizing the same expression to show that Yosef's benevolence, Yosef's reconciliation, is directly attributable to Yehuda, who is arguably no less a hero in the story, that he opened up the dialogue with a symmetrical Vayigash. Isn't that powerful? Just a splendid textual clue? Were you impressed with that? We'll have a look at this now. The pattern only continues in the text. Because Yosef then settles his brothers in Mitzrayim, the whole Jewish family in Mitzrayim, And they all live together in harmony, supported by Yosef. And the Torah highlights the location where Yosef settles them in Egypt as a family to live happily ever after. Where, the Parsha tells us, Eretz, the land of Goshen. Does that term and phrase Goshen not ring some sort of echo in your mind? Goshen is the same expression as Vayigash. What a coincidence. The coincidence is too great that our Parsha, which is brimming with expressions of Gisha, of drawing close, it begins with Yehuda's Vayigash of dialogue and continues with Yosef responding in kind, Geshuna Eli, drawing them close, and then eventually settling them in Eretz Goshen, the land of drawing close. That the overarching pattern of the text, the larger thread of the text, is directing us to understand that the live happily ever after, the blissful moment or period of peace in Jewish family history, when we live together in Egypt in peace, points back to which event? It points all the way back to the original Gisha when Yehuda engages in dialogue. Because Yehuda is no less of a hero to us than Yosef. Yes, it is Yosef who teaches us the power of reconciliation, as we trace tonight, finding redemptive quality in the suffering which others visited upon us, finding redemptive quality, finding purpose, finding meaning, so we can transcend the hurt and the resentment. Yes, that is the heroism of Yosef. But Yehuda is no less a hero in the story by teaching us the power of dialogue, the power of keeping the conversation, always engage in the conversation, never give up on the conversation, on the dialogue. This is what Yehuda's teaching us. What a splendid pattern in the text. What a splendid message here. Our parsha's truly living up to what we thought it would be. As Parshas Vayigash, the parsha literally of drawing close, it is the roadmap to ensure that the blissful moments of peace in the Jewish family will not be temporal, right? But we can make it last with these applicable, relevant messages. And now with this confidence that we have captured the Vayigash theme, we can move forward now onto our grand finale in studying the phenomena of Jewish infighting, and hopefully the hope for unity in light of our parsha. Well, let's take a step back here. Let's call a spade a spade. We Jews tend to fight a lot. We do. We tend to fight a lot. And believe it or not, one of the reasons we fight so much is actually because we are so connected to each other. We are living together, one on top of another. We are engaging with each other. We're in a shul together. We're performing mitzvahs together. But deeper than that, we have a soul connection. And the closer you are to someone, the more prone you can be to fight and bicker with them, right? We all know that all true fighting occurs within the family. I mean, it's uncanny. I have noticed some people. You notice people in the family, and you're like, you are so civil to the outside world. You would never behave this way to a neighbor or a coworker. And yet you do this to your spouse, and yet you do this to your brother, to your sister. Right? Fighting is so often an expression not of dissension, but actually of closeness. It is because we are so close that we fight. It is certainly because we are so close that we are so vulnerable to being hurt by each other. Because as we know, the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference and apathy. Hate is generally an expression or a symptom that there's something hot between the two of us. We're unable to break away from each other, even if we would like to do so, right? If we were really so apart, you move on, right? But we Jews are unable to do so. We're a family. We are so connected. Right? And perhaps that's encouraging within itself, if I may be so bold. The fact that we are continuing to fight and we're not moving on is actually an expression we are more connected than we think we are. Perhaps the dynamics for reconciliation are already in place here. On a related note, we Jews fight because we are so connected, and we Jews fight because we are so opinionated. Two Jews, three opinions. And why are we Jews so opinionated? Well, because we're people of substance. We have strong views. We have strong opinions. Right? Those who are not so substantive, people who are kind of just go with the flow types, the nonchalant, detached type. Well, they don't have really what to fight about. It's because you and I, as Jews, as Torah Jews, we're passionate. And we have such deep viewpoints. That is the cause for so much fighting. Because it's very hard. It's a real art to tolerate someone when they are violating so many holy grails of yours. So many holy cows of yours. And we're bound to do this with each other. I have my viewpoint of Judaism. I have my viewpoint of life, which is almost inevitably going to be at odds with yours. This is the dynamic of machlokas, of course. And this two Jews, three opinions concept that we fight because we have such deep held views is, when you think about it, also a manifestation of our closeness as we begin. Because as much as you and I might be disagreeing about a viewpoint, we're fighting because we share the common commitment to ideas, to viewpoints. We're both equally passionate about ideas. We both refuse to be nonchalant and be the A-OK yo man type. That's not the way we are. So even while we're fighting so passionately because we are both equally committed to hashkafos, to ideas, to meaning. Do you not see that? And therefore, I'm suggesting that amidst our fighting, perhaps if we take a step back a moment and we think, while per se we are so disconnected, at the foundation and at the root of our fighting is the foundation which connects us. Perhaps that will encourage us to reconcile. This is, by the way, how I see an Abaye and Rava type of fight in the Gemara. They passionately disagree with each other, but they are best of friends because they are both committed to that same foundation. The Torah Shabbat Pad, everything with Rava and Abaye are developing. So you and I, we might not be debating Chai or Potter, Talmudic verbiage, whatever we're debating and even fighting about. At the root, we're fighting so vehemently because we're committed to that ideal called meaning, purpose, matter. Things matter, opinions. Now I'm thinking of the following type of scene. You have a couple in the therapist's office who are screaming at each other, the he did, she did type of thing. And the guy is screaming, my wife this, my wife that. And then the therapist catches him and says, my wife, say that again, my wife, my wife. Right? You're accusing us, my wife. Things are so hot, things are so testy here because you are so connected to each other. Right? And it might take a therapist's help to jump in this way. Mediation is sometimes helpful, but perhaps sometimes we can even do this ourselves if we are big people in the midst of a fight and try to utilize that common foundation, that which is binding us at the core of our fight, to draw together again. To realize in all Jewish disputes there's a blood thicker than water here. Because ultimately we are the same blood. That blood as Banim L'Makom, sons of Hashem, children of Hashem, sons and daughters of Hashem. So I would pause it. That's my nice drasha for the night. But this is the art. Let's see if we can trace what I just described in the parsha now. Let's see if when we return to the Yehudi Yosef dialogue, the model for Jewish fighting and ultimate Jewish reconciliation, let's see if we could trace what I described. that they are reconciling with each other due to what they share, due to the fact that at the very foundation of their vehement fighting, the Yehudi Yosef opposition, is so much connection. Because you all recall, so many Midrashim see our Vayikash love Yehuda. Yehuda draws close to Yosef, not in the sparkling, cheery-eyed picture of sweet talk, of sweetness and olive branch, extending olive branches. We know Vayikash love Yehuda is seen as a very contentious sort of dialogue. Yes, dialogue, yes, conversation, as we said before, but a very contentious one. But yet somehow amidst this contentious encounter, they are able to reconcile. Somehow the dynamics of reconciliation lay in the contention. And let's see this brought up beautifully by the Medrash. Let's study the Medrash's portrait of the Yehuda Yosef encounter here, and we will see this is such a Jewish fight going on. A fight of intensity, common intensity, the way two Jews fight, which is actually an expression of just how connected they are. The Medrash in our parsha begins, Ki hini hamalachim na'adu avu yachdav. The kings are filled with fury about each other. This is Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda and Yosef are the two kings of Israel. Malchus Yehuda, Malchus Yosef, Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yosef, the father of the two Messiahs, they're fighting as two kings. You know what that means? That means they are both fighting as people of substance, as people who hold formidable positions in Judaism. And on some level, don't we all hold formidable positions, certainly formidable opinions? And that is why we are fighting so passionately, as we discussed before. And let's trace the continuation of this Medrash. This Medrash is thick, thick in visceral, vivid imagery. Have a look. Medrash continues, describing how Yehuda approaches Yosef here, in full fury and anger. Yehuda was angry here, and his very chest hairs spiked up like porcupine needles penetrating through his shirt. Right. And then he put chunks of iron in his mouth, which he chewed to dust. And not to be outdone. You know, Yosef responds here. Yosef signals to his son Menashe, who gives one kick, and then the whole palace shakes. And Yehuda takes stock of the situation. He says, we got to be careful here. He's kicking. That's a kick from my father's house. Yeah, he must be one of us. Now, what do you make of a Medrash like this? A Paul Bunyan type of story. What am I supposed to do with this? This fantastical stuff. Chewing chunks of iron down to dust. Porcupine skin. Porcupine needles. Chest hair turned to porcupine needles in full fury. And the response of the furious kick. What a fantastical Medrash. What do I do with a Medrash like this? What is the Medrash really teaching me? What does it do for me? Medrash are always bringing a theme, a concept. Well, don't you understand? The intensity portrayed here. This is the way we Jews fight. This is the way we Jews fight with all of this intensity. Each one of us marshaling the full power and substance of our position because we are formidable people with deep-held opinions and values. If I may say, Kayim don't fight like this. And Yehuda says it so sharply when Yosef, represented by his son Menashe, gives the furious kick and says, you're kicking like a Jew! You're kicking... family. No other opponent would respond with such intensity. Don't you see the delicious, powerful, powerful statement in this Medrash? If we mine it for its meaning and we not fall prey to a simplistic read What's going on here? It's bringing out the full fury of a Jewish fight and how intense it is due to the players and just how substantive each one is and how passionate each one is by virtue of the fact that they're Jewish. Their sovereign position as kings, Yosef, Yehuda, and on some level all of us. But it is within this Vayigash Elav Yehud that we so splendidly traced in the text earlier that reconciliation occurs. How ironic that reconciliation occurs amidst so furious an exchange, amidst of a conversation of such bluster and fire and fury. Well, now we understand how this happens. Because as we said, as we might be at loggerheads with each other, but we're both at loggerheads with each other because at the foundation of everything, we are equally committed to shared values, the notion of ideals, the notion of purpose, and that's why we're at loggerheads with each other. Because we are so connected, because we share so much, including the commitment to argue, to have deep-held positions. So I am suggesting. But you might say, Rabbi Sklar, this was a bit too much tonight. This was a bit too much tonight to try to argue that all the beauty and heartfelt promise of dialogue we were discussing earlier can actually happen not despite contention, but due to the foundation of our contention. That we could say we're both fighting so much because at the heart of it we're so connected. That's a bit much. And it's a bit much, you might say, to spin this in the Yosef Yehuda story. So let's see if now we can trace a clear, unmistakable clue pointing us to the realization. Yes, indeed. So the Torah sees it. Reconciliation, not despite the contention. But believe it or not, amidst the contention. Have a look at the following medrash. And with this, we can begin to tie the ribbon on this beautiful gift called our parsha. Says the medrash regarding the Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda drew near. You know what this term Vayigash drawing near means? Hagasha l'mohamed, drawing near can mean for battle. Hagasha l'peyes, drawing near can mean for appeasement. Hagasha l'tfilah, drawing near can mean you're drawing near for a plea. And Yehuda was doing all of these simultaneously. Fighting, appeasing, pleading. Now it seems so contradictory. So paradoxical that there can be milchama, battle, and peace, appeasement going on concurrently. What sort of encounter is it? Are we fighting? Or are we drawing near and appeasing each other? At the root, it's the very same thing. At the root, we are so close that we are almost unable to resist engagement with each other. We're either going to fight or friend, become friends, or draw close. Apathy is not an option here on some level between the two of us as family members. Right? As husband and wife, as brother and brother, sister and sister. We're going to engage with each other. The lure, the connection is too great. We're either going to fight or we're going to embrace. It's going to go one of these two ways. Because at the heart of it, it's one midah. It's one trait called Hagasha, closeness. The wind between us. There's this wind. There's this rhythm between us. There's something hot between us. It's going to either be contention or love, but it's just too powerful. We can't, despite our best efforts, become apathetic and cold-hearted to each other. So amidst this fury is actually the basis for reconciliation and the basis to realize that the very fact we're fighting with each other and not disengaging from each other is actually a demonstration of how close we are, and therefore the dynamics for reconciliation lay amiss the contention. Think again about that therapist who points out to the screaming husband, you keep screaming at my wife, my wife. Just say the woman. And some of you say, oh, the woman did this. Suddenly it's not so... There's not so much contention anymore. The contention is because she's my wife. Oh, yeah, she's your wife. Possessing my wife. Yeah, when it's my wife, it's all hot. And you might be fighting, but you're fighting because it's my wife. Well, and then the therapist can lead the husband in all sorts of directions. She's my wife. The aspects you like, the aspects you don't like, how connected you are, blah, 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 blah. But don't you see? The Hagasha is both Mohammed and Pius. Simultaneously, the Medrash magically understands for us, highlighting the greater truth of how we can reconcile with each other. So here we have so many meaningful, applicable messages in Jewish family dynamics, in the quest for reconciliation embedded in our parasha. Everything we trace tonight, Yosef's magnanimous overture, his ability to overcome hurt when he finds redemptive purpose and meaning in the suffering which was visited upon him from others. Yehuda never giving up on the power of dialogue and the humanity of the other side. The promise for reconciliation amidst conflict. We are fighting so much because we are so close. My wife, my brother, at the heart of the conflict is the hope of reconciliation. And as we could turn to what we developed in the beginning of this year, how the repetitive cycle of Jewish suffering, Gullus, directly attributable to the repetitive cycle of Jewish infighting, well, there's hope. Our parasha is a beacon of hope. It's a beacon of geula, that somehow we can resolve these Gullus issues. Because there's a way to bind the Jewish family together once again. And therefore, I would suggest taking our parasha as a whole and appreciating it, how it is masterfully staged by the great script writer, by the great stage master, the divine author of the text Hashem itself. See how perfectly it is contoured. Parashas Vayigash at the very onset of the Jewish people settling in Mitzrayim. This is our first exile. And here at the beginning of exile, we have the blissful moment of Jewish reconciliation, Jewish family reconciliation, to tell us you could resolve this Golus dynamic. It's possible. It all lays in this Vayigash, in this encounter. Well, wouldn't it be so amazing to sign our final John Hancock and sign off tonight's year if we can point at directly at a pasuk or psukim, which basically say our whole year, that the Vayigash Elav Yehuda is this encounter and conversation which serves as the beacon up for geula, for resolving this existential timeless Jewish problem. And it's right there in the Haftorah, and we will end with this. Read a Haftorah, which perhaps many of us know so well, with fresh eyes and with a sensitive ear. The Haftorah is a nevuah from Yechezkel, where Yechezkel the prophet is told, Kach lecha yitzachar uksov lav liYehuda, write Yehuda on one branch, on one piece of wood. Ulekach yitzachar, take another branch, uksov lav liYosef. On the other branch, write Yosef. You have two branches. One says two pieces of wood. One says Yosef. One says Yehuda on it. V'kravu samachad alachad. Draw them near. L'eitzachad. V'hayu lachad namiyadachad. The two sticks will converge as one. Understand how this Haftorah, this sister passage to our parsha, so selected, so designated. The branch with inscribed with the Yehuda and the branch inscribed with the name Yosef are coming together. This is the Vayigash Elav Yehuda, the Yehuda and the Yosef branch coming together is a physical symbol of the Vayigash Elav Yehuda replayed subsequently in Jewish history. And the imagery here of the two sticks, the Yehuda stick and the Yosef stick, converging, lends itself to all sorts of possibilities. How do these two sticks come together? Do they come together hand, almost seamlessly hand and glove? Do they bang together before they become one? Yeah, the Vayigash Elav Yehuda contains all of this. Dialogue, conversation, banging, duking it out, it's all here. But where do the sticks coming together, banging together, lead us as they become one stick? What does this all represent? Explains Hashem in the prophecy here. The message is, Hinei Anochi Lokeches B'nei Yisrael, I'm going to take the Jewish people back. Vasisi Osam L'Gayachad Baretz, I'm going to make them one unified nation in the land. They're now one big stick, one big kingdom, U'melech Achad Yilukulam, with one king. That we become one people, one kingdom. We experience Geula through this Vayigash Elav Yehuda, through this ability to dialogue, ability to reconcile everything which happens when the Yosef party, the Yehuda party, whether the people, whether the sticks, whether these existential sects and fragments within the Jewish people, the Yehudas and the Yosefs, as they exist till this very day, the fractured part of the Jewish family. It's when they come together this way that we will experience Geula and all of its beauty. That here we have now our Parsha and all of its beauty. Our Parsha has lived up to what we thought it ought to be, with its unified, cohesive message of how we can get this right, how we can ensure that the blissful moment of peace in the Jewish family can be an enduring one, can truly last. Thank you all very much. This was my pleasure to present tonight these discoveries and this all-encompassing perspective, this cohesive tapestry unfurled now in front of us.